Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. If you're a regular listener, you already know that Belinda doesn't do things halfway. The first time she joined us, we talked about extreme hikes and solo adventures that pushed her limits. But today we're turning that conversation on its head. Because what if you don't want extreme? What if you simply want to feel a little braver, a little stronger, a little more connected to the world outside your front door? Today, we talk about easier trails, village-to-village walking holidays, boots that actually fit, what belongs in a day pack, and how to build confidence without intimidation. If fear, gear, fitness, or safety have quietly been your excuses, this conversation gently removes them. You don't have to summit a mountain to call yourself adventurous. Sometimes you just have to begin. Listen now to my conversation with Belinda Coker. And laugh as hard as we did when Belinda tried to not share her nose scratch, or at least as hard as I did. How do I introduce my guest today? If you're a regular listener, you might be wondering if she's going to be my co-host. But no, although we never seem to run out of things to talk about. Belinda was my first guest of 2026. She inspired us with stories about how she wasn't too keen on what she saw in the mirror as she traversed mid-age. So she did something about that. Really did something about that. You can listen to that story in that podcast. Link is in the show notes. But it led her to the extreme, often solo hiking she does now. In her bio, I saw she is also a house slash pet sitter, an experience I found myself enjoying for most of 2025. I am actually underselling her when I say she's a house slash pet sitter. She is so experienced, she's written articles and designed courses to make you a first choice when applying for sits. Needless to say, I asked her back just a couple of weeks ago to share her expertise there. And the link to that conversation is also in the show notes. Today we're chatting again. I'm not sure if we got our subject matter sort of bass ackwards or not. Today we're talking treks for the less experienced, less fit, less prepared among us. We started with extreme hikes, and now we're reassuring you you don't have to be extreme. Not sure which order we should have done these conversations in. Anyways, Belinda Coker, welcome back to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we and you are embracing the journey.
Thank you for having me back again, Agnes. It's a pleasure. And happy Galentine's Day, by the way.
Yeah, as we record that, it is Galentine's Day. That's
Oh,
Now, last time we chatted, you were on a house sit with a lovely dog. Is the
yeah.
dog an extreme hiking buddy, or is it keeping you at a more sedate pace?
Oh my gosh, I am in the middle of Suffolk at the moment on a as we discussed on a lovely house sit. It's for a month. Beautiful 200-year-old house, 5 bedrooms. It's got a gorgeous Aga in the kitchen, and I'm in a lovely little village called Yoxford, which is in the middle of the Suffolk Downs. And it hasn't stopped raining. So all the trails are as muddy as anything. And today was the first sunny day. So no, it's a gorgeous she, Isla, is a gorgeous 9-year-old lab. And yeah, we are doing the walks. We're doing the walks. And the great thing is that she's not like a normal lab. She doesn't really like getting her paws dirty.
Oh,
So
my goodness.
today, going out when when the mud had started to dry, she was just like bouncing around. So yes, I'm getting some walks in, and it really is lovely. It's a beautiful village, and across the road, one of the emergency contacts, his name is John, and he's, I don't know, he's in his 80s, and Carol lives next door, and she's, I think, in her 80s as well, and they've invited me for coffee tomorrow at 11 a.m. after church
Of
on
course.
Sunday. And it is just such a lovely village. It really is. And I've started to talk to a lot of the locals, and they really are. It's just lovely.
I don't want to give away too much about our house sit conversation, but I think we agreed that the joys of a long sit are the fact you do get to know the area, the people, the neighbors, that sort of thing. I will chuckle as you say it's been raining because as we discussed offline, a friend of mine that I haven't seen for 55 years, oh my goodness, she's visiting here right now. And she, of course, just lives around the corner from you, pretty much. And so she'll be thrilled to know that she's been enjoying this beautiful weather that we've had recently. And we'll be going back, hopefully, to more sunshine and the rains are over. So that's great.
It's a lovely county. Suffolk really is beautiful. It really is beautiful.
Home of John Constable.
It really?
Yes, it is.
Right. Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
The Hay Wain, I love the Hay Wain.
I love that. I love
And
that
for
painting
anybody
as well.
who's wondering what we're talking about, John Constable was an artist. So, anyways, okay, so a few thoughts came to my mind during our first conversation. So I'll start with those and then we can let the chat wander. The most obvious excuses I came up with. If someone suggested hiking or trekking, I don't know, what do you call it? Hiking, trekking?
Look, I call it hiking, but I think trekking, I mean, people have got these, like it's called hiking if you do this, it's called backpacking if you do this, it's called trekking if you do that. To me, it's just hiking. And in the UK, it's called walking. People are going walking holidays. So I think that it's different. It's a different name for it, and basically the same, essentially the same thing all over the world. But I think what we're talking about is going for a walk in nature, whether or not that be in wilderness or if you're going from town to town or whatever, but more so a walk which is different from around the block in suburbia.
It's funny because up until recently, I would do a trek up a local mountain. Now, we stayed on the road because of different knee and ankle problems that different people had. And because we were on the road, I mean, despite the fact that the incline was like ridiculously steep, I still felt funny calling it hiking because we were on the road. But I think in my notes I wander back and forth between trekking, hiking, whatever. So we'll just go on. Anyway, so I was saying that if someone said to me, hiking, the most obvious excuses I would come up with are fitness, gear, and terrain. Let's start with fitness. I remember your very first trek exhausted you. Tell our readers what they need to know, need to be, from bare minimum to really should for. Did we actually mention that today we're talking easier hikes?
No, we are going to talk about easier hikes. But what I was thinking about is easier hikes when you can go for to a destination and hike from town to town. Maybe you want to go on a vacation and you want to hike between villages, say in Europe, of which there are so many hikes which you can do that, and they're called walking holidays, where you can walk as little as you want or as much as you want. And some of the hikes, if they're easy, you can just do 4 hours a day, and they can be very easy terrain. But if you want to talk about just going on a walk, say 2, 3, 4 hour walk, it can be as long or short as you want it to be. And if you're just starting out, I think one of the main things is to make sure that you go with somebody else so that you feel comfortable and you feel confident. And before you start out on your own, you need to build up the confidence to be able to walk in the wilderness or on a trail on your own. Some of us don't, but I always think it's a good idea, just in case, and just in case anything happens, just in case you fall, slip, or anything like that. And so you've got a wingman.
Well, it's interesting too, because and maybe this is just my personality, but I would like to know that I am at least mid-pack. pack if I'm going on it with a
Yeah.
walking group. I don't want to be the person that's struggling to keep up. I think if I remember correctly, on your very first one, didn't you say there were like 80-year-olds out there just
I know.
striding along?
I know they were all 70 and 80 years, and I was 55, and I was the slow girl in the group. I felt like, the new kid in the classroom that just, didn't fit in. But funnily enough, a couple of those people are now very good friends of mine. But yeah, I mean, it takes a little bit to, get used to. But a lot of the meetup groups, they will say whether or not a hike is for a beginner or someone who's, got a little bit of experience, a little bit of fitness, or someone who's super fit and super fast. As you'll get a feel for it in a meetup group or a Facebook group or any sort of hiking group that you meet. And I think it's really important to find people that you're on par with. And a lot of the older people, or people who are sort of in our sort of in the boomer generation, or even the generation before the after that, which is I think I am, and I get muddled up with my X's and Z's and all that sort of thing. I'm not quite sure where I fit, but it doesn't matter. There's also a lot of walkers groups where people, it's just a meander, and it's just about being outside, and it's just about having a great chat and maybe a coffee afterwards or whatever, a coffee and cake afterwards or lunch or whatever. And so there's a lot of groups like that. So I think if you are starting out, because there are so many groups out there, is just to try them and just go. And if you go for a walk with a group and you don't gel with anybody and you find it too hard or too much or too this or too that, try another group, because I think the benefits far outweigh the negatives, which I can't really think of any, apart from if it's going to be rainy, then you're going to get wet, cold and wet. But then, if you have a good jacket and nice hot cup of cocoa afterwards, it's like,
There you go. Yeah. Okay, so good jacket. That segues us perfectly into gear. So obviously really good walking shoes, boots, something like that. And you see all this stuff nowadays where, like the fabric wicks the sweat away from you and stuff like that. Do you need all that stuff if you're
Well,
just.
look, those types of clothes are made from what's known as performance fabrics. And performance fabrics are very good at what they do. Now, you can also get very cheap clothing made from performance fabrics at stores like Decathlon, Walmart, all those types of stores do sell clothing or sports clothes which are made out of what's known as sport performance fabrics. Now, let's look at something which is moisture wicking. So a moisture wicking top will has the fibers of, and it's usually nylon or sometimes polyester, are made out of fibers which have got these little channels built into them, which acts like a sponge and draws the moisture away from your skin. And so what it does is it takes the moisture away from your skin and takes it away like a giant sponge. And so you don't feel clammy and wet. If you wear, say, a cotton t-shirt and you sweat, the moment you stop, your sweat cools down and you get cold. So moisture wicking is actually really quite important. It's a good thing to have. On the flip side, if it's a cooler day, layers are very good. And we hear about base layers and mid layers and all that sort of thing. We hear about layering, but what exactly does it mean? Well, when you layer, say you layer your base layer, it's got to sit very close to your skin because it holds the heat in your against your skin. The next layer is your base layer, and so and that also needs to be quite tight. Sorry, your mid layer has to be quite tight against your base layer because the air that it traps in between the two layers can't be too airy because it's got to retain the heat. And so each layer that you add needs to sort of build on the previous layer, and it needs to be quite tight. Whereas if you're wearing a performance fabric for hot weather, it needs to be quite loose because it's got to let the air flow. So yeah, a performance fabric it's pretty good. I mean, and you don't need to spend a fortune because you need to look at moisture wicking, and Amazon, Walmart, Decathlon, all those. I think it's is it MEC that you have in Canada? MEC?
Oh, Mac, yeah, Mountain
Yeah,
Equipment Co-op, yeah.
and they all have their own brand of performance layers, and it is good. But I mean, really, if you're just starting out and you just want to go for a walk, and all you've got is a cotton t-shirt, just go for a walk.
Now, is there a difference between shoes and boots? Because you sort of hear about people, if you're on trails, that boots might be a little
Okay,
safer.
so I actually wear shoes now. I
Okay.
used to wear boots, but I've now moved to what's known as trail runners, which look like sand shoes, but they've got very deep tread on the bottom, which almost feels like you've got little tractor tires underneath your feet, and
Okay.
you're sort of walking up and down, and they're very light. But if I was starting out, boots are a good idea. Because they give you the stability for your ankle support as well. Would I do trail runners straight away? Well, I don't really know. What I do recommend, though, is you go somewhere to try your boots and your shoes on, and asking, just walking into asking friends or whatever and buying a pair of shoes or boots off Amazon is never a good idea. If you want to take this on, and you've been for a couple of hikes and you decided, well, I like this, and you want to take it to the next step, your shoes are the most important things that you want. And you really want to go somewhere where that you can get fitted properly. So you go in the afternoon after your feet have swelled, and you wear a pair of hiking socks. And highly likely the shoes that you will get will be half a size larger than the shoes that you normally wear, because you need the room in front of your toe for when you're walking down, when you're descending, so you're walking downhill, because your feet are naturally going to push forward in the shoes, and you will end up with black toenails if you don't. But a proper sports store will be able to fit you properly for your boots.
I'm glad you mentioned the extra half size because many years ago I worked in a shoe store and I did have people, especially women, I hate to say it, coming in and saying, "Oh no, I've always been a size 7.5. I couldn't possibly be a size 8." That sort of thing. And it's like, "Oh, well, I'm a size 9." So, but yeah, just to realize that no, you do need to go up a little bit and just in case
And
a listener is.
just for the record, I actually wear men's shoes when I hike. So I'm normally a 41 and a half European size, and I usually get a 42, sometimes a 42 and a half in men's sizing, because men's shoes are a lot wider. I've got
Wider.
quite wide feet, and I just have that extra breathing room. Now, if you have got really wide feet and you feel that you're quite stable in your ankle, then maybe trail runners might be a good fit for you. A lot of trail runners have got very wide toe boxes, and so it gives the opportunity for the front of your feet and your toes to really splay out as they should do, in a normal environment, before we all had to wear tight shoes. And that can be very beneficial when you're trying to negotiate stones and rocks and things. But for just starting out, you don't need to spend a lot of money, just a cheap pair of boots, but please get them fitted. Go to a sports store, and I think MEC is Excellent, or REI,
You
any of
can call it
those.
Mac. It's okay.
Can I? Right, great. Mac or REI or any of those sorts of stores. Go outdoors if you're in the UK, Anaconda if you're in Australia. All of those places have people that will be able to fit you properly for your boots.
Cool. Yeah. How about a backpack? Should somebody have some sort of a backpack just for, I don't know, fluid or whatever?
Absolutely. So if you're going on a day hike, a backpack is really important. And for this, you don't need to get fitted properly. And if you really had to, you could borrow your kids' backpack. I mean, all it needs, what you do need to be able to carry is rainwear, a warm layer, a beanie and a sun hat, and water, food, and a first aid kit. It's just a small first aid kit. It's really important to be able to fix yourself up if you're out on the trail. And of course, a toilet kit.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that part.
So you do need a toilet kit. But I have actually have a blog post on my website all about what to take in your day pack. And it is really important because, say, for example, you go on a hike with a girlfriend or another friend or anyone, and and suddenly someone sprains their ankle. It might be you or it might be your hiking partner. So all of a sudden your 3 hour hike suddenly might turn into a 7 hour ordeal. And being able to feed yourself, provide water, shelter, any of those sorts of things are really, really important,
Yeah, I was going to ask about safety later on, but I know out here in Canada, because during the winter, and even still, the days are quite short, and people will get out and they're having a lovely time, and then all of a sudden they realize they don't have enough time to turn around and get back in daylight. And of course, depending on where you're hiking, it may not be safe to keep going in the dark if you're not prepared. So.
Exactly. And this is one of the things that you should do before you set out is if you've got a trail in mind and you can see it on an app like All Trails or whatever app you're following to find this trail, is have a look at the elevation profile. So you can always get the elevation profile, and this will show you how high the trail actually goes. And if the steep part is at the beginning or the end of the trail. So, for example, the trail might rise up very steeply and then it might descend quite gradually. And you might say, well, actually, I think it might be better that we do it back to front and we do the gradual descent first and make the sharp ascent, the sharp descent instead. And so that can make you decide which way you hike a trail, because you don't want to be having a hard incline or a hard ascent slog in the middle of the day. You want to be doing something like that right at the beginning of the day, when you've got more energy and it's cooler, and definitely not towards the end of the day or in the middle of the day. So that's very important as well.
My next question was going to be about terrain, and for me personally, my knees are really bad. So I'm great on the flat. I'm good going up, like on the incline, but the decline for me is where I run into problems. So for me, I do that sharp incline early in the day and then take that gentler decline because my knees will be happier.
See, whereas
So.
I'm the opposite. See, I would look at an elevation profile and I hate going uphill. I detest it. So I would look at the gradual incline and I would say, well, I would want to climb up the incline slowly at the end of the day and then come down really fast. And it is a sort of like a matter of preference as well. But also, and if you do find going downstairs or going down declines quite difficult, then hiking poles can be your best friend as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you've touched on this, but it sounds more and more the more we get into this is hike with somebody to begin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you start off on your own, you might feel quite co sort of confident, but all of a sudden, especially when you if you're going on a trail that goes to a point and then returns, when you turn around, suddenly that trail looks completely different coming back the other way. And it can be very confusing, and nothing is going to look familiar. If you go with somebody else, you'll both be able to say, well, does that tree look familiar? Oh, yes, actually, I do remember. I remember that tree. It had the yellow flowers on. I do remember that tree. Yes, we are going on the right way. So it just not only does it give you that confidence, but also if you are, especially in an out trail, it's really important to be able to have someone to sort of confirm your sort of gut feeling, because when you're on your own, suddenly that gut feeling, you might question it, and then you might make some wrong decisions. Yeah, it is a safety thing. It really is a safety thing. I mean, the wilderness is not something to take for granted or to laugh about. Yeah.
This might be a good time to ask about apps. You mentioned, is it AllTrails? There's a nomad who comes on and talks to us every annually on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's really quite neat. And she does a lot of solo hiking.
Right.
And I can't remember. She talks about apps. I know there's one where she chooses her trail. And if she wants, because there was one time, I guess, that she just was enjoying the view and then realized that her app was giving her a hard time because she had literally wa wandered off the trail she was supposed to be on, which would have led to an issue later in the day, of course, because she might not be able to find her way back.
Yeah.
But what sort of apps do you use?
So I do use AllTrails. I try, if I'm doing a long distance hike, I will try and find the GPX files, which is the electronic map, and I will actually put it on a couple of different apps, so that if I and some of them I can look at when they're offline, and some of them are online only. And the reason why I do that is, some of them I can look at, some of them provide me with a topographic map, which for me is very important, and other ones are just much more a quicker, and they can be a lot more sort of accurate. But it's funny, I've just had a conversation with this on a Facebook group, because somebody was saying for the Isle of Skye, which is an island in Scotland, and there's a famous trail on there called the Isle of Skye Trail. And someone said, well, what maps do I need? And all these people sort of came out and they said, well, you don't need a map, you can just look at your GPX. And I sort of, piped up and I said, well, I was on the Canary Islands about a month ago now, and I ended up getting myself into trouble. I think we spoke about this incident on Tenerife. But not only that, but my electronic maps failed. So my electronic maps failed because my phone would not register my fingerprints, due to the cloud cover, due to the screen being wet, and it just wouldn't not register no matter how hard I tried to dry my phone off. Just the cloud was so thick that the moisture just clung to the phone screen. So electronic maps can fail. So it's always good to have a map with you, a paper map. And with that, you kind of need to know how to use it. But a lot of the maps will have the trail marked on it, especially if you get a map that does have trails. And when you actually buy one, you can buy one that does have trails. But it's good to be able to see, well, okay, so we've just passed that hill there, and you can kind of see what a hill looks like on a map. And to be able to understand where you are when your electronics fail is actually quite important. Yeah.
interestingly, just trying to keep it now simple too in terms of
Yeah,
the
I'm
less
getting
experience. Oh yeah,
I'm
no, no.
getting
No, where I was going to go is a number of years ago, I moved to a city that I had never lived in before and rented a suite from another woman who was about my age. And because I had my dog, I was walking all the time. And so she said, "Oh, I'd love to walk with you if that's okay." And turned out she didn't know her own city very well either. I would go on to a site called Plotaroute.
Right.
And you can just click that you're walking, and all the trails, all the paths come up. And so, if you wanted to start by just looking at what's in your own current environment, I don't know if I were to get too far out of the city how accurate it would be, but it might be a good place to start in terms of getting used to different routes. And you get into a big, huge park, and there's one here in town that I still get lost in.
Exactly.
So, it's always something out there with any luck.
But saying that, there's a lot of trails out there which are so well marked, and it's so obvious which way you're going. So it's very, it's really, if you are doing a beginner hike, you're highly likely going to be on a well-maintained trail with good signage. So please don't let what I've said, put you off at all. So,
No, but I think if you live in an area where there are like places to go that aren't extreme, it might be, oh yeah, let's give that a try this weekend. You and your friend, and it's just I'd rather be safe than sorry, that's for sure. Yeah.
absolutely.
Now on that, should a person, like you say you're going with a friend, should you still leave a plan with another person who's not going?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of the safety things that you need to do. Like, first of all, you need to check the weather. So you need to know, and the weather is one of the most widely broadcasted things in the world. I mean, no matter which country you are, wherever you are, there will be a weather report, right? And it'll be, on news, on print, radio, whatever. So the weather is, there's no excuse for not knowing what the weather's going to hold. So check the weather. Check your map where you're going and decide, and from that decide if you're going to do the trail, which way you're going to hike it, and then tell somebody. So if you're not back, then that person, that trusted person, can then sound the alarm. So that is really important. Like, yes, you might have cell phone coverage, but someone might succumb to a heat or a cold related illness. And a heat related illness, they're far more common than we know, you might realize. But people might succumb to anything like that, a snake bite, all sorts of things, broken ankle, anything, sprained ankle. And for someone to be able to sound the alarm is so important.
Part of me sort of thinks that, we do positive, then a negative. But, I guess the reality is you can go for a walk in your local park and twist your ankle. I've had dandelions pop out of the sidewalk and grab my ankle. crap does happen from time to time. And so especially if you're out of reach. And I think cell phones, we need to address that for just a moment, because we're so used to having cell coverage, but there are so many places where there still may not be cell coverage. And so to rely on that too much could lead to a problem.
Absolutely. And especially, I think I can remember being in certain areas in Canada where, there was huge areas where there was no cell coverage. New Zealand, Australia, all of those places, areas where there's not a lot of cell phone coverage. Places like Europe, where there seems to be cell phone coverage everywhere. It's
Well, I
crazy.
think the population density is a little bit different than in Canada. And I was actually just talking to a woman from England and explaining that, Great Britain is about the size of Vancouver Island here where I am, and yet their population is like twice of total Canada. So, it's you can go lots of places in Canada, and there's just no point in having cell coverage. So the beavers and raccoons just don't care. Now, just to get perhaps a bit more personal, there's people out there whose biggest barrier is the fear, doubt, anxiety, rather than the physical challenge. From your own travels, your own experiences, was there mindset shifts that helped to demystify actually getting out, making that transition from a local hike to something a little bit more adventurous?
Just need to scratch my nose.
We're not, it's, you can do what you want. We're not videotaping.
Videotaping. That's
Or
right.
whatever it's called. It's not.
I
Now you know I'm going to leave this in. Oh, dear. Oh, this is great. You see, our last conversation happened at what, 5 a.m. for you and 9 to 10 p.m. for me. So we laughed and it was just so ridiculous all the way through. And so you said, okay, so this time I'm not going to laugh. And I'm going, no, we've got to laugh. So you go ahead and scratch your nose. Nobody will see you, but I probably will leave that in. Oh, dear.
Did I have a mind shift? Yes, I did. Well, I think because I enjoyed it so much and I saw how beneficial it was for this older generation that I started walking with, I immediately had a mind shift change that I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be fit and healthy like that. And I wanted to do something else with my life as opposed to just working and being on this sort of daily grind. I needed to get out there and I needed more of this nature fix because that was what was really, it was really doing it for me. And I kind of experienced the same thing recently when I did that hike in the Canary Islands. I was by myself and I had the most beautiful campsites out in the wilderness. They were just absolutely gorgeous. And then after I had the hypothermia incident, and this is the first time for the listeners that this is the first time this has happened to me in 5 years. And so from a safety perspective, it can and does happen to anyone, but you do need to sort of be doing it in extremes. But I actually came back to the UK because it did give me a little bit of a shock, and I'm just wish that I hadn't. I wish that I'd stayed and, sort of, ground myself a bit better and then set off again and completed the hike. I'm going to have to complete it later on this year, but I feel so much more comfortable out there. I mean, it's great. I love it. It's something that I really, really love. And is it a mind shift change? Well, compared to what I was doing 10 years ago, yes, absolutely.
Two thoughts come to mind, and the first one is I don't know if it was you or my annual nomad, but just explaining that too, if you're out and about, like if you're in the park, in town, whatever, but once you get out and about, the bad people aren't out there. They're not going to bother sitting on a trail way out there just in case somebody should happen by.
I actually feel really safe out there. I really do. I have a garment in reach and I have to sort of, message my partner with my coordinates every night so he can plot exactly where I am on a map. And it's really quite sweet. But to me, I actually feel a lot safer out there than I do. There might be little critters that might want to get into my tent and eat my food and all that sort of thing. But if I am in a bear country, I would probably I would put my food outside, of course, outside my tent in a bear canister. And if I'm in other places where I know that there's going to be critters, I will hang it from a tree. So It's unlikely that anything is going to really harm me. I mean, I am a little bit nervous about foxes in Europe. Just talking about Europe, I am a little bit nervous about foxes because I've heard that they're quite territorial and they'll come and try and sort of bite into your tent and all that sort of thing. But that's a fox, it's not someone who's actually going to physically harm you and steal from you. And most people, and I kind of feel very comfortable about leaving my full pack at the door of a supermarket because most people just look at your hiking pack and they don't see that it's a $400 Durston Kakwa. They just see, oh, is it a backpack, a hiking
How
pack?
fast can I run with that if I pick
No, I mean
it
it doesn't for them, lots of people when I am in these places and I drop my pack outside the
Yeah.
supermarket, they don't see it as something which is worthwhile stealing
Yeah,
in
yeah.
any way, shape or form. So and I kind of don't feel that do th think that the bad people are in the cities and the towns.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, because you just mentioned having a few regrets about actually quitting on the Canaries at that, a couple of weeks ago. Some time ago, I interviewed a woman who'd, thanks to her new husband, had agreed to bicycle across the US from the West Coast to New York. And within, she was not in shape. And she insisted on a bicycle built for two, whatever those are called, because she could never get left very far behind. And so that worked for him. He was fine with that. I guess for the first several days, she'd be part way or finish her date, whatever, and she'd just be in tears. She just wanted to quit. And at one point in time, she messaged her friend and said, I can't do this, I can't do this. And her friend messaged back and said, you never quit on a bad day. And when you had messaged me about your issues on the Canaries, I sort of had that thought. And then I went, wait, no, this was also health issues. Like hypothermia is a different ball of wax than being totally exhausted and having aching muscles and things like that. So, yeah,
I
it's,
mean, yeah, I mean, I've had bad days before on the trail, and yeah, I understand that never quit on a bad day. But I had a lot of trouble, my core,
Oh, yeah, I know.
regulating my core temperature. But yeah, I probably could have just rested for a little while, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't
Yeah,
matter.
no, you made
I
the
can
choice,
go
and it was
back out.
in the moment. It was, you know what a friend also told me one time is a bad decision is your best available data. So, given what you knew at that moment in time, it was the best decision. So,
That's actually very comforting. Thank you.
yeah. Now we talked about one of the main reasons you're here is if somebody does want to take a vacation in Europe, especially in Europe, there are relatively easy you called them inn to inn and with luggage transfers and stuff like that. Talk to us about that.
Okay, so this is becoming more and more popular now as walking holidays. And some of them are very easy, some of them are more difficult. It depends on what your level of fitness is, how much time you have. But a lot of the walks in Europe follow old trade routes. So they actually go from village to village. And you think about 200 years ago, there were merchants or peddlers who would walk from village to village, and that was completely normal, back then. So a lot of those old trails still exist between villages, and they are walks. There's a fantastic walk which is right from the very north of the Netherlands right to the south. And of course that's flat. I mean, the whole of the Netherlands and Holland, I think it used to be called Holland, is as flat as a pancake, right? And so this particular trail, I think it's called the Peter Pat, is it goes from one little cute Dutch village to the next little cute Dutch village,
Okay.
and some of them are 4 hours apart, some of them are 6 hours apart, but there will always be some mode of transport also between the two villages. And a lot of these walks, which are a lot of these documented walks, there will also be luggage transfers as well. So all you need to do is to carry a day pack with, some wet weather gear, some sun gear, and your lunch for the day, and your lunch money, whatever, and a bottle of water. Britain is absolutely full of them. You have some amazing hikes, like you've got the Cotswold Way, you've got the West Highland Way, which is British, the British. Britain's most famous end-to-end hike, the new coast to coast, which has just opened up. So Britain has, I think there's something ridiculous, like there's well over 50 of these walks all through Britain, and they follow old trade routes. There's one that we did last year, which is called the Fisherman's Trail, which runs up and up the coast from right from the very south of Portugal all the way up to Porto, and that is absolutely magnificent. And then one that my partner and I have our eyes set on for is the Rheinsteig, which goes up along the Rhine River in Germany.
Okay.
Stops off at all the little wineries on the way, and then comes
And
back
you're
down
walking.
the other side. Well, actually, there's one in Britain called the Speyside Way that stops off, and it's got 12 whiskey distilleries on the way. So, no, so a lot of these walks, they are on trade routes, so they do follow little villages, and you can stay in these little villages every night. And and a lot of them will have half board or full board. So half board is usually it's weird. Half board is breakfast and dinner that night, and breakfast the next morning. It sort of sounds a bit more like full board, doesn't it? But that's known as half board, and full board is when you get lunch as well. And that's very normal that they will offer you though that, and it comes in as a little bit of a package.
Oh, that sounds great. When I was doing the research, I did some research, even though we've spoken before. There was Lake Bled Trail in Slovenia and Sancterre trails in Italy. And I think those caught my attention, just maybe because, I'm used to England and we all speak English. But I was getting that cultural touch in as well if you were in some of the other countries.
Absolutely. And when and actually one of the most famous of these walks is the Camino, of course, the Camino de Santiago. So that goes from village to village, and then you stay at you can stay at hostels, or you can stay in little hotels if you prefer not to stay in dormitories. And that's one of the fact, and that is growing exponentially every year. They're having more and more people do it because it's such a great atmosphere, that whole hike. But it really is a cultural immersion, and it's just a fantastic way to see a country. It really is, yeah. And so you can basically Google walking tours, and then whichever country you want to go to, and they'll all pop up.
Oh, perfect. And maybe we should add a rider in. I don't know about the other trails, but I know with El Camino de Santiago, is some of those are for more experienced hikers, but that you can find routes that are for the less experienced, less capable.
Absolutely. So, the Camino is kind of like this large river network, and sort of so branches out all over Europe, and then all the European trails, the Camino trails, all converge on the French Way, which is the main Santiago route that runs along Spain. And some of the Caminos are easy, some of them are more difficult. The one that my partner and I did last year, which was the Portuguese Camino, It wasn't difficult at all. It was really quite easy, and it was great. You stop every day for a menu del dia, and it was wonderful. It really was. And yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm in Canada. A lot of our listeners are in the US. We had talked briefly that, you weren't as acquainted with sort of the easier trails. I actually just flashed up over here. We do have something called the Trans-Canada Trail, but I'm not sure. 28,000 kilometers. Holy moly.
Oh yeah, no, that's not an easy trail.
Okay, I was wondering because I mean, of course, the picture they show me is a lovely boardwalk that's flat. So, but what I guess the whole 28,000 kilometers, obviously, you wouldn't do, but there must be sections that are very
Absolutely.
doable.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
a lot of these hikes, they're broken up into sections, and you can and a lot of them have their own websites. For example, the ones that I mentioned, the West Highland Way, Fisherman's Trail, the Rheinsteig, they've all got their own websites. And within those sites, you can actually see the different stages, and you can say, right, okay, well, I might start off, I only have want to walk for 4 days. What are the four sections that I can do? Or you might say, I do three sections over 4 days if there's a village that you can break a section up with. Sorry, I just got the hiccups. Do you want
You
me to
have your
say that
water.
again? I'll say that again. I'll do that again.
No, I think no, you've managed to get it out. Oh dear. Well, given the fact that I'm back in touch with this friend from 55 years ago, and she lives in Suffolk, I do need you to send me a Suffolk trail before next year when I go over there to visit.
No, there is one here. There's a great Suffolk Trail which is here, and it really is gorgeous. This county is absolutely beautiful. It really is.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Okay, we've touched on a fair bit, I think. Is there anything we haven't talked about that mid-age women, if they're thinking about doing this, should think about, should consider, should prepare for? I don't know, any of the above.
Well, if you're saying, well, how can I go on how can I go on one of these walks? I want to do it. None of my friends want to do it. My husband doesn't want to do it, or I might not, they might be single. And so you think, well, how can I do it when I'm by myself? I don't want to do one of these walks by myself. There are a lot of tour groups that organize these walks. Max Adventures, there's G Adventures, and so you can join one of these tour groups and do these walks. And a lot of them have guided are guided, but there's also self-guided as well. Now, what does self-guided mean? Self-guided means that you get a map. And and they organize all of your accommodation. They organize all of your luggage transfers, but you it's up to you to sort of walk the trail in your own speed, and then they check in with you every night and make sure that you got to your destination. And
Oh,
that's a
okay.
great way of doing it as well. So it sort of gives you that peace of mind. You've got someone to check in that's looking out for you, but you can still walk it yourself as well.
Yeah. I know when, well, I guess earlier we mentioned meetups. You mentioned Facebook groups. I'm sure in any local area there's going to be something. I mean, there's everything on Facebook. One thing I was thinking about is, when I was in that city that I hadn't lived in before and I started walking with my landlady, she was not, I it was just at a time in life when I was quite fit, she was not nearly as fit. And if I thought she was struggling, I would stop and I ask her about, I don't know, the local flora, or I'd stop and say, like, oh my goodness, look at this view, so that she never felt she was holding me back, but it allowed her to catch her breath. So I guess what I'm thinking of is, if a listener is the person who wants to entice a less fit person out, there is a way to do that without
Yeah.
making that less fit person feel as though they're
Yeah.
not managing or holding back or something. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really important because everybody goes at their own pace. I mean, I'm terrible at going uphill. I will do three steps, and then I'll take a break, turn around, look at the vista. Three steps, take a break. I mean, I despise going uphill. I really do, you know. But when it comes to going downhill, I'm running downhill. I think it's great. And my partner, loves going uphill. He's like, trudges uphill like, it's nothing. But he actually really doesn't like going downhill. And he gets all upset. And so, there you will always find two people that will hike differently. And I think it's really important that you do embrace the fact that you're out there and you're doing something which is enjoyable. And it doesn't matter if someone wants to stop and take photos all the time of every flower. It really doesn't matter. Just unless you're on a time, a real time limit and you have a plane to catch, well, then, then just have a little chat. That's what has happened.
Well, and for all the Belindas that are in our group, I will say that when I was doing my mountain climb, it was so steep. I mean, even on the road, it was so steep. I would literally look straight down just in front of my feet because then I wasn't aware of the incline, the
Yeah.
steepness, and I could just
Yeah.
keep on going. I'd just keep on trucking
Yeah.
along.
But
And,
if when you're walking up a road, that is much harder than if you're walking on a trail, the same steepness, because on a trail, it's like steps and you're doing this and you're doing that and then you're doing that. And you probably got switchbacks as well. When you're walking on a road, it is straight up and it can be really, really hard. Yeah. Walking uphill on a road is actually harder than walking on a trail.
Oh, I feel
Yeah.
so much better. I'm going to clip this piece and send it out to my walking friends.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay, I know you don't have a easy walking website, but where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Okay, so soultrader.com is my website, and if you're interested in the West Highland Way or the Fisherman's Trail, I have full posts on those, which show you about the trail and also gives accommodation as well. So accommodation reviews and suggestions for each town. But both of those are great hikes, and you can only just also just do one or two sections as well. You don't have to do the whole lot.
This is where I have to admit that I took our talk for granted because we've talked, what, this is our third conversation in 6 weeks. But don't you also have a whole bunch of articles on all sorts
Oh,
of trails?
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So people can
So,
poke around.
yeah, absolutely. So I as well as the two hikes that I've mentioned that are into in, I have a lot of information on other hikes all over the world as well, and other hikes that might be of interest to people if they are thinking about traveling is New Zealand, because New Zealand also does hut-to-hut hikes. So, there's a lot on there, but not only that, but I have a lot of articles about safety, about what to put in your backpack, about what to wear when you're hiking. And in that article about what to wear when you're hiking, I also go into performance fabric. So you
Okay.
can find out about moisture wicking, you can find out about polypropylene versus merino, and what is the difference and how they actually keep you warm. So I have a lot of information on there as well, so which you might find
Yeah.
useful.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I remember the first time I really did poke around and go like, "Oh my God, she's just giving away the whole thing." Oh, dear. Okay, you know I'm going to ask you a personal question. You've already touched on this a little bit. You aborted your last hike for health and weather reasons. You've said that you will go back. How do you feel about that? Are you going to make like plans that the weather's better, or is there anything deep down inside that's going like,
Yeah.
no.
Well, funnily enough, because We're going for another hike in April, so leaving on Easter weekend. And that's a prime time to be able to go back to the Canaries. And I just felt, no, I just don't want to go back this time. I just want somewhere which is completely new. And so we're going to do some hikes in Greece. But I do plan to go back to the Canaries and finish it in October. So the Canaries are an autonomous group of islands belonging to Spain, which are down by the Western Sahara. And hiking them during the months of June through to September. Is they're very hot, so it can be extremely dangerous to do some of these hikes on these islands. I mean, they are very, very hot. So spring and autumn, or winter, but not this last winter, because it was extremely unusually cold, is the best time to hike. So we'll probably go back in October. And yes, it is a little bit of a beast that I need to face again. But saying that, they were just absolutely beautiful. Some of the most beautiful islands I had ever seen. I mean, there's one island on there called El Hierro, which they have this tree that weeps water. So the indigenous people, they glorified this tree. This tree was almost like a god. These islands are volcanic, and some of them are very dry, and so there's not a lot of sort of natural water, spring water, coming down from the mountains. And this one island called El Hierro has got trees that weep water. So on the leaves, you can actually put a cup underneath, and it'll drip slowly, like if you're trying to sort of condense seawater and get fresh water like they do in the movie. So it's very slow, but I mean, it was something that they glorified. So yeah, it's very interesting.
Holy moly. And one final thought about weather is, I've got a weather app on my phone. I watch the news with my client every night. It's like those poor meteorologists, no matter what they do, there are a lot of days that they don't get right. So I'm just thinking about you on the Canaries, as prepared as you must have been. Some days shit happens.
Exactly. And we'd like to sort of see, well, yes, we've that this is a weather report, but also when you're talking about alpine weather, can change just in the blink of an eye. Weather can and has changed very, very quickly. And so alpine is actually, it's not the safest place to start hiking. It really
Wind, which is
isn't.
why people are going to listen to this again to understand
Yeah.
that there are lots of lovely, amazing, and
Yeah.
end-to-end sounds absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds really,
It
really
is.
nice.
It's really lovely. And as I said, some of these are old trade routes that have, been walked for 200, 300 years. I mean, they really are lovely. And especially Europe, you are going from one old village to another where these settlements have been villages or hamlets. Maybe they started off as a hamlet and then a village and then a town, but they are very, very old. And there's a lot of history, and especially for those people who are history buffs, whether World War I or World War II or any sort of history, there will be history almost in every town that you walk past. So yeah, I find that fascinating as well. We just don't have the history in the New World, do we?
No, not in the least. I've said that so many times. And just thinking about it, we've talked about the fact that you should be carrying water. So those winery to winery tours would work just fine if you're carrying water.
I think the one along the Rheinsteig is just so beautiful as well. I've seen pictures of it, but it is just absolutely gorgeous. And the little villages along the Rhine really are, it's stunning. And you've got those gorgeous fairy tale castles, the ones that you see in the Black Forest, and the travel
Rapunzel, Rapunzel,
brochures.
and all those.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's great.
And so I just think that'd just be amazing. So, yeah.
Okay, that's the positive note I wanted to end on. Okay, as always, your website links are in the show notes. All the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on this one. If this conversation sparked an idea, a memory, or a question about getting started with hiking or walking trails, head to the comments and share it. Ask it. Someone else listening might be wondering the very same thing. Feel free to share this episode with a friend who loves the outdoors or who wants to love it again, just at a gentler pace. If you're enjoying these conversations, make sure you're following the podcast so you don't miss what's coming next. Each week, we explore new ways to think about this chapter of life with curiosity, honesty, and a little courage from time to time. A reminder, I release each episode a day early on Substack if you'd like to listen there. And finally, the resource or the Start Here tabs at boomwithabang.com are really coming together, so check them out. Belinda, thank you for being my guest again. Thank you so much for this conversation and the
Thank
laughs. So
you.
we had to get those laughs in.
Yeah,
And for reminding us that of adventure doesn't have to be extreme to be meaningful. I just love
no.
you. The look on your face as you're explaining or describing some of these areas. And that hiking, like life,
Yeah,
can be adapted to meet us exactly where we are. Thank you for that.
absolutely. Thank you, Agnes.
Have a great rest of week.